Support for this podcast comes from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative, connecting communities with the resources, infrastructure, and networks to ensure a vibrant local free press.
From KVPR in Fresno, this is Central Valley Daily. It's Monday, February 23rd. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. How many visitors is too many for a national park?
Yosemite's been dealing with, you know, trying to set some limits on carrying capacity, going back to the general management plan in the 80s.
Yosemite National Park is doing away with its reservation system, but some wildlife advocates think it could open up the park to massive unregulated crowds. We'll have that conversation in just a moment.
Central Valley Daily is a production of KVPR, Central California's NPR station. And if you start your day with a podcast and still want more, listen to All Things Considered. I'm the host, Sarith Hawk. Each afternoon, you'll get the day's local and national news on our radio broadcast. Join me weekdays from 3:30 to 6 on KVPR 89.3 in Fresno and 89.1 in Bakersfield. Or ask your smart speaker to play KVPR.
And now to our feature story. If you plan to visit Yosemite National Park this summer, you won't need a reservation. Park officials recently announced they are abandoning the system they've used on and off since the pandemic to control traffic and visitors in the park. Instead, they'll use what they call a more targeted approach for crowd control. That includes encouraging visitors to come on weekdays rather than on the weekend. Beth Pratt lives on the edge of the park and is a longtime conservation leader who's also written a book on Yosemite. She was the first in 100 years to document wildlife in the park. We spoke with Beth about that back in November, and today she joins us again to discuss this pivotal change for parkgoers.
It's a good problem to have, I think. You know, so many people want to visit Yosemite and specifically Yosemite Valley because we all connect to it. But, you know, I just go back to even Disneyland has a carrying capacity and it's no different for Yosemite National Park. And Yosemite's been dealing with the, trying to set some limits on carrying capacity, going back to the general management plan in the 80s. You have the Merced River Plan, which, you know, is kind of a more recent document. And, you know, what you see is these parks, much like even a Disneyland, have a carrying capacity, both ecologically and socially. And we need to come up with solutions to honor that. Now, there's been various solutions being proposed over the decades I've been involved in the park, everything from, you know, a shuttle into the park and, you know, closing it off to vehicles, to timed entry, to entry by region, to even increasing the parking in roadways. But, you know, for now, absent some other, you know, major changes, the reservation system was landed on to help with that capacity. And why is that important? You know, unlike a Disneyland, where probably the worst that would happen is you're crowded and the lines are long, in a Yosemite, you are talking about, again, both ecological damage and social impacts. The ecological damage we see firsthand. This is not theoretical. Those of us who have been coming to the park and who live in the park, we see what happens when there's no limits on it. And we just saw it this past weekend with Horsetail Falls, where they reversed the reservation system. You get resource damage. People, they can't find a parking place, so they drive in a meadow. You get damage to, you know, sensitive areas, sensitive plants. You get impacts on the wildlife. You get impacts on preserving these places for future generations, which is part of the Park Service's charge. But you also get these social impacts. You know, the lines were to El Pratel, which we all knew once the reservation system came off. I mean, that is a, you know, multi-mile traffic jam that is going to take 3 hours for someone to get just even get into the park. And then they announced there was no parking available in Yosemite Valley. I mean, there's health impacts to that, sitting and idling cars for hours. But also, that's not a great visitor experience. Again, it has an impact on the resource and on the people. And then lastly, I'd say we're slashing budgets on parks. And again, another thing this reservation system was addressing is, especially at these peak times, Yosemite doesn't have the infrastructure nor the staff to deal with it. And that gets at safety issues. That gets at, you know, the inability to manage visitors in a way that ensures the park protection and people's safety.
I want to note that California's U.S. Senator Alex Padilla agrees with you. He also released a statement condemning the move to abandon reservations. But to play devil's advocate here, what about people mm-hmm. who see this move as a good thing, that this decision will maybe increase access for all to one of our nation's most treasured parks?
Yeah, I think we have to grapple. In my comment letter, I think we really have to, as a nation, grapple with that. Again, I understand that access to all seems fine, but, you know, these parks are access for all. They are democratic. Equal opportunity of access does not mean unlimited opportunity. And indeed, if we just don't put limits on this, then, you know, A, people who visit aren't going to have a good experience. And B, we are not living up to the National Park Service's mandated charge of preserving these parks for future generations unimpaired. So if we're getting to visitor levels that are causing research damage, that are, you know, impeding visitor safety, you name it, are literally threatening sensitive or even just all wildlife species, then we are not preserving these parks for future generations. And I think we have to consider that in these decisions, that unlimited opportunity of access could actually put the very parks where people are trying to see at risk.
You mentioned the letter you wrote. Now, the park did an analysis, but tell us about the letter and that process and why you spoke up.
Yeah, so the park did what they do in these situations. Again, I referenced many management plans going back to the general management plan in 1980. And as we were getting back up to visitation levels and as damage was being noted, as you know, all these impacts were staring us in the face, they did a multi-year study, did a visitor access management plan, an environmental assessment over multi-years, everything from researching numbers to talking with visitors to opening it up to public comment. So I and many others submitted comment when that plan was released. They had a number of alternatives, including timed entry, including entry at different stations instead of just one. But so commented and spoke up in favor of the, I think it was alternative B, at least the, I would have liked 24-hour reservations, but they had timed entry based on peak times. So that was a multi-year research and public process that many weighed into. And I think it is really good for folks to read because it really outlines the process they took. It outlined that most people were in favor of this. They did, again, whether it be the public comment or the research that they found when they were doing. And it really outlines the rigor that went into assessing why, at least at this point, a reservation system was the best option to achieve what they were seeing as some pretty severe impacts, again, whether it be resource damage, the inability to manage these peak number of visitors, or putting visitor safety at risk.
Okay, well, I want to let listeners know some of the findings from their analysis that we're discussing here, because they found the reservation system wasn't needed, and here's why. It was not the most effective tool for managing crowds, they say. A few changes that they say will happen are there will now be additional staff at key intersections. Park officials plan to improve visitor information, like when roads are closed or there's congestion. Part of their plan also includes encouraging weekday visits and promoting recreation outside of Yosemite Valley. Why are these suggestions or techniques not feasible, in your opinion?
Well, first of all, I think you're referring to the assessment that they said they did to revoke the reservation system,
yes,
which I would love to see, because, you know, you are looking at, again, there was a rigorous multi-year with public comment assessment with lots of research done. So why all of a sudden the only thing I've been able to find out is they did it last year, and the statement they made was that, well, there was parking some days, you know, and, you know, so I would love to see that, because I'm really curious why you would say that research somehow supersedes years and even in some respects decades of rigorous park planning and assessment on what was needed.
Oh, and
I also,
just to clarify real quick, Beth, so that is information that the park put out, but you're saying they haven't actually furnished the study that they're quoting in that release.
Yeah, I think what you are referring to is what was put out with the press release, right?
Mm-hmm. That, yes.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is, how does this new assessment, which I believe was conducted, again, the only thing I can find out was in 2025, they said they did some yes. surveys and that was there was parking most days. Why does that assessment that, again, we haven't seen what went into it, that was done in a very limited time frame, somehow uncovered things that and dismissed the rigorous multi-year assessment that was done with the visitor access management plan.
Got it.
And even some of the solutions that they put in that press release don't seem to address the problems that were outlined. Like, I'm not sure how putting more people at intersections is going to help with three-hour lines at the gate. And if you are talking about wanting people to visit the park, you know, weekends are the prime time. Again, it's just something's not adding up here, why you would go against years of assessment with a, again, I haven't seen it. I'd love to see it. I'd love to see what went into reversing this decision.
I want to note you wrote on X, and I'll quote you, our parks mm-hmm. now seem to be managed for business interests rather than protection. Mm-hmm. I'd love if you'd elaborate on that thought, and I'm curious if you think there's a world where business interests and environmental protection can coexist at Yosemite National Park.
Yeah, to the second question, absolutely. Listen, I'm not your typical tree hugger. You know, I have a biology field undergrad, but I have an MBA, and I actually think that business well done can actually, you know, help support the mission of the parks, right? Help lift it up. But we should not have businesses making the call for how to manage parks. The park should be managed for, again, to remain unimpaired for future generations and ensure that the resource is put first. And I know, you know, our Representative McClintock has talked about the reservation system hurting business. I know from some of the comment letters that, you know, these businesses say this is, you know, this is hurting our business or doesn't allow us to grow. And I'd say that it is not, you know, a superintendent, Finley, God, it was in the 90s, even wrote a letter to the business community saying it is a bad business strategy to base your business growth on park visitation. We know things are going to impact that, and it's not going to keep growing infinitely. And so that's where I wish, you know, these business communities, and many of them are friends. You know, I live here in these gateway communities. Many business owners, you know, who own businesses here who rely on park visitation, I know. But, you know, these gateway communities have been around for a long time, you know, obviously. And I think what we're seeing is it is not that businesses can't survive up here under the reservation system. It's when you look at the growth up here, I forget the exact statistics, but the National Parks Conservation Association, who's been really on this issue, has shown just how the explosive growth of hotel beds, you know, there mm-hmm. used to be two bars up here when I lived up here, or and now there's eight. So it's that these businesses are kind of depending on infinite park visitation to grow, which we shouldn't be. We should be managing the park for resource mm-hmm. and businesses can flourish, but you know, you have to be strategic about business growth in that context. So I do think there's a good partnership here. But what we've been seeing is that's being put first with decisions like these. Because why else would you remove the reservation system given all this rigor? It's because of the outcry of people saying we just want unlimited, whether it be in-park business or in these gateway communities.
Beth Pratt, conservation leader and author, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
And if you want to hear Beth discuss her book, Yosemite Wildlife, The Wonder of Animal Life in California's Sierra Nevada, you can listen to our November 24th episode. And that is today's show. Today's episode was produced by Jonathan Linden and KVPR with support from the Central Valley Journalism Collaborative. I'm Elizabeth Arkalian. Find the latest local news anytime at kvpr.org.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.